You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's FX PhD, John Montgomery with you, joined as always by Mike. How's it going, my friend?
Good, good. Happy to be back in the studio, as it were, in the tech compound, having been shooting for the last 3 days solid kind of thing, with different projects, really. Yeah,
very much FX PhD related.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, we're shooting for the Nuke course, we're shooting for the DOP course, we're shooting for background. It's just, you know, at the beginning of term is sometimes that's how it kind of works out. And I'm, you know, happy to do it, of course.
Yeah, but it's 3 days out of the office, back in, there's always a load of stuff to catch up on. Not the least of which is the latest buzz from any of the Apple announcements, some related to industry, some not. But did you get a chance to catch up on any of the Mac Pro stuff? I mean, from my standpoint, not too much that was a surprise there. In
I guess the big, you know, one we wanted to see was how much this is going to cost. I mean, you know, I'm reminded of a story about people looking at the, I think it was the Mustang when it first came out. Mm-hmm. And everyone was like, yeah, it's kind of good. It's kind of good. And then they told them the price. And I was like, oh my God, this is the best car ever. and there's sort of like a bit of that, which is, you know, like you can't really judge these things until you've got some idea on how much they're going to cost, because it's not great at any price. So I guess my question to you is, what do you think about that $3,000 price tag?
I mean, it's going to be, my thought about that, it's going to be expensive when you load it up with more processors. I think it's, you know, I think we're going to be close to hitting $5,000 on the top of the line one, I think, when all is said and done, or beyond, I guess you could say, because we're only 1,000 away from it with the 6-core Mac Pro, I guess you could say. I think one of the interesting things will be to actually see what the speed is. You know, we guessed, I guess, relatively accurately that the discussion of only a single CPU meant that they were talking about the E5 with the multiple cores. But it'll be interesting to see how fast that really is, how much you would gain from having multiple CPUs. I mean, that still kind of rubs me as, from my standpoint, frankly, the main shortcoming in it. Not discounting the fact that you not having NVIDIA at this point is probably problematic, but a single CPU, even though it's multiple cores, I'm really curious about the end performance of it at this point.
I mean, you'd think the whole point of this machine is a high-performance machine, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that would be, by definition, the one thing that they're going for, because, you know, my God, the stuff they're stacking in an iPad is kind of unbelievable. So if you're going to do that with an iPad, you know, you 2 or 3 steps up a ladder when you get to the top mm-hmm. of the range, you know, garbage bin size. I'm sorry. So, you know, I mean, that would be my thing. It's like, can't imagine they're going to ship something that's got inferior quality as far as just sort of performance. I mean, what would be the point? It's not exactly as if the new MacBooks are crap. I mean, I think the MacBooks are really kicking it in terms of a good machine for people to use. So you need to have something above that.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting too. We'll see how it, you know, with so much of the processing being done in OpenCPL, OpenGL, or OpenCL, I guess, the equivalent mm-hmm. to NVIDIA's CUDA, I guess, with more and more applications taking advantage of that, there's a little bit less of a concern about processing, and potentially, who knows, with the type of memory they're using, with the type of storage that they're using internally, combined with, you know, 12 cores in a single processor at the maximum end with 30 megabytes of cache, that could be pretty fast, relatively speaking. And obviously, when you hit the render button or the play button, that's where most of the time is spent. Frankly, when you're interactively working with stuff, that's a little less of a concern. Just raw CPU horsepower, but when you're, you know, doing your final render, doing your final process, things like that, that's where it certainly does come into play. And, you know, not minimizing that, but a lot of time we're not maxing out the CPUs on a machine. I mean, I have a little, you know, run this little CPU diagnostic. What's it called on the Mac? iStat menus, it's called, but it's got this little CPU thing that and you look at it and it's like, you're really not using much of the CPU, even when you're doing editing and things in the timeline in Premiere. But again, we'll be, I'll definitely get one when one comes out to put it through its paces. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah. If you were getting one, first impressions, what would your configuration be? Like, I mean, and that's obviously...
I think it's going to be tough with the price, but I'd think I'd steer towards doing more than six cores.
Personally. I mean, my thing is that, basically speaking, I'm going to anticipate a version two of this. And I'm a little nervous about spending a lot of money on version one because I imagine version two is going to have a lot of things I actually want.
Yep.
It's hard. Yesterday I was shooting with a lot of iPads. I'll tell you about it for later.
Yeah.
But you picked up a version one of the iPad and you're like, oh my God, it's a brick.
Yeah, right.
And you get to the iPad mini with a, you know, retina screen. You're like, this is awesome. Now the question is, could you hang off buying an iPad? I mean, I certainly couldn't. They were cheap enough, comparatively speaking, right, when they came out, that I knew I'd do that. But and we use them for work. But I guess my thing is with this, it's a bit more expensive. If I stacked up and spent a ton of money, there's not an upgrade path feeling to it. So
no,
it's like you're going to swap
the
and replace.
Knock against it, a major criticism of it from many people.
Yeah, so that would be my concern.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, again, I'm curious how fast in the end the processor combined with memory, combined with everything that happens in the bus. I mean, it could be, do you know what I mean? I mean, it could feel faster just basically because of the, you know, internal architecture than the sheer number of cores would convey, I guess.
Yeah, I think I'm right in saying that there's been a hold notice set by Autodesk on upgrading Smoke to the new operating system because they're saying, you know, well, we haven't validated it yet and stuff. So if you allow that's just Mavericks, there's going to be a bit of time before, you know, anyone can really say with any certainty, okay, if we're running this app, be it an Autodesk one or a Adobe one, on this system with the latest operating system, these are the kind of benefits you can get. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is different for you, obviously, because you know, you're deliberately kind of testing stuff and need to be in that position. But if I was in a company right now, I think I'd probably be just saying, look, as much as I'd like to just go and order one right out of the gate, I'm going to have to hang back for a bit. I can't also imagine that there's going to be, well, I don't know. Do you think there's going to be like a big kind of backlog on them?
Hey.
Do you think it's going to be like...
I really don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, with the basically that entire market effectively declining so dramatically as it has, you know, I think a lot of people may be already happy with some of the computers they have, whether, you know, because of such a long gap between the last Mac Pro and this one, you know, maybe a lot of people gotten used to just being okay with doing work on the Retina for much of the work. I'm not saying it's ideal, but maybe that's just kind of the new paradigm that people are okay with.
Especially
considering the lack of expandability that there are some people, myself, I'm not one of those people, I don't think I'm finding what it is regarding expansion is going to be okay for our purposes. But that's the other issue, is that you can't put in, you know, multiple cards as easily in this as you could, you know, HP or Dell Tower or the former Mac Pro.
Yeah, I would be, maybe it's just me, but I would be a bit conservative. I'd be like, hey, let somebody else iron out a couple of the kinks in getting all this working with the apps that I want. When you need to use it in production, you know what I mean? When you need to be up and running, and quite frankly, clients aren't going to tolerate it if you say, well, yeah, but it's really great, this new stream. It doesn't work yet, but it will be really great. Yeah, so I would be, I'd be hanging back. It does seem like a major jump in tech that could have a couple of gotchas that we just don't know about yet. I mean, to really want to see them. I mean,
agreed.
John, I'd like to see you have one and then tell me that it works.
Give you the bread, yes.
Let's just be blunt about this.
Yes. Well,
that's what I'd like.
And yeah, that's true. And even with a new OS, as you said, there's a little bit of warning about Smoke on Mac to not upgrade. Adobe After Effects has a patch available that you can download that will patch the current version of After Effects if you're running Mavericks. You don't need to download that patch if you're not upgrading Mavericks. It's only designed to address that. And then the upcoming version of After Effects and Premiere that are coming out in what they call the October release, that when that was announced, what IBC timeframe, that will also by default support OS X Mavericks. So on the Creative Cloud standpoint, we're pretty good, it looks like, as far as upgrading to Mavericks. I mean, I've been using it for probably a month and a half now. I think I can say that without violating now the NDA. But I've been using, and it's been fine. I've been doing all our production work on it, editing and so forth, and it's been fine with the exception of one thing, which was some color calibration software, which I am just getting this week, and therefore can wrap up my final class in the sysadmin course, which is why that one's delayed, is basically not running. I just decided to wait till this version came out to do that final class.
Right, right.
No need to jump in, I think, is the point. Also, the thing to remember. But that being said, I think I've been okay with most everything. I think the hardest transition, the weirdest transition or worst, has been mail so far, which just does not show me my unread mail counts correctly, things like that. It's not really a happy place for me. But apart from that, as far as the workflow tools and the tools that we use at FXPHD and FX Guide to get stuff out, it's been fine.
Yeah. I wonder, do you think there's much production use for the other stuff they announced? I mean, obviously, there's a bump in the laptops, but I mean, I didn't see anything. Did I miss anything? I guess they're shipping a bunch of stuff free, and there's a bunch of consumer-level stuff at that level. Was there anything else at a production level I missed? Because I really haven't seen the keynote.
No, not really. I think the iPad is a very nice iPad Air is a decent upgrade in that. It's lighter, it's nicer. If you're on set, you know, obviously as you talk about, I mean, there are iPads everywhere on sets. There's so many great tools in iOS that you use for that. So that's a sensible upgrade. The iPad Mini got a Retina display, and I will not buy another display if it is not a high DPI display. I've just become so used to that clarity, and the higher pixel, I mean, it really changes how you work. It's a bit odd in working because, say, in Photoshop, you're actually looking at an image that is, you're previewing it in 1:1 pixel at 100%, so you're looking at an image that's like half the size. So I find myself constantly working in Photoshop at 200%. it's actually difficult to actually commit. So I actually have another computer that I have to look at, or an external monitor hooked up on my MacBook to actually look what it looks like to most people. So that's problematic, but that is actually one really nice aspect of, I think, the technology for our industry. I'd love to see more Retina displays just in general, display technology in general.
Yeah, I'm very happy with the Retina display stuff. I think it is just astounding.
And I would upgrade your MacBook Pro on this version now, finally. I think this is kind of a sensible point to get in.
Right.
As well.
Okay. I have upgraded my laptop.
Oh, you did upgrade your? I thought you were waiting, holding off on the Retina.
No, the reason you didn't know about it is I bought it out of my own money. It's not a company purchase. I didn't mention it to you. That's the only reason. Yes, I have one. It's very nice.
It is very nice.
You loved yours,
so
I just followed suit. Yes, I think it was a tax return or something.
Yes.
There you go.
Sounds like a sensible use. But yes, that, it does make a big difference when working, doesn't it?
I think. Well, the other thing is I wanted to get an NVIDIA card in the graphics for stuff that I was doing. And there was a couple of other things just pushed me over the edge. Like the fact that I have a succession plan, as I'm sure you do, with family succession plan.
Yes.
Where basically I passed off down the line. Well, my daughter managed to trash my old laptop, so she needed another laptop. So I'm not going to buy her a new one because you don't get that when you're 14. So I gave her my old one and got a new one myself. It was the thing that pushed me over the edge.
You did it for the kids.
Yeah, exactly. I just buy a product, got a new laptop myself. Just an accident. Just kind of happened, honey.
Yeah.
Honest.
It was not for you. It was for the kids.
No, obviously not me.
It was for the kids. So, hey.
For their education.
Education. Not for fun. So, hey, tell me about the shoot. You mentioned the iPads.
I did several shoots. There's a shoot coming up that we're doing in background because, as I say, the outset of that class, we often talk about this idea of get off your ass and shoot some stuff, and we thought it would be fun to do that. And so I thought, well, one of the classes we should do this term is just, shooting something that for ourselves, a complete thing. And Jason Wingrove, who's obviously a prof and a friend and a colleague from the RC, came up with this terrific idea for a film clip he wanted to do, and we were like, yep, we're there. And over sushi, I talked him into making it primarily an exercise that has post, but the post was done before the shoot, as you'll understand when you see the class. So once all the post was done, the shoot was really a one-take wonder, and it was 47, 48, 49 takes to get one that worked, and we had nothing until it worked, and the light was about to go, and I think we were like in a rapid five, and we got it at 4:45, having started at like 9 o'clock in the morning. But it's a lot of fun, so that's coming up. And also we're shooting for DOP course, which has been great fun doing stuff with a professional grip and going through professional gripping gear and solving some problems. And we're also shooting some elements that are going to be used in the Nuke course based on, of course, what we were discussing last time, which is your stuff in Mexico City.
Yeah, yeah, it looked really good. So we've got that in the hands of the guys. We're starting the tracking on it. They're going to start working on the matte painting for that. So yes, a busy 3 days for you. More than 3 days, obviously, with the prep for the shoots.
Yeah, we have a big sign on my wall: no shoot without without good pre-pro. I mean, I've actually written that up on my whiteboard about 8 times larger than it should be, because you'd think by this stage in my life I would know that. But several years ago with PhD, it was just like really easy to get yourself to that position where you go, but I've been doing this for so long, you know, we've kind of talked about it. We sort of, I'm not, and I literally mean like several years ago, we lost the formality of the pre-production meeting that we'd actually want to stop and sit down and just go through everything. And we reintroduced it, and that's when I wrote up my whiteboard. So
I think I was down in Sydney when you ran into that fact that it might be a good time to start doing the pre-pro really in earnest again.
Yeah, really in earnest. And it's funny, you know, because you've got no client. Normally you bitch and complain about clients, but one of the things clients can make you do is stop and articulate stuff because they require it. And when they're not there, you can, well, you know, do we really need to sit down and go through this? We kind of know what we're doing, don't we? Especially if you're shooting here in our studio where, you know, quite frankly, stuff is at hand. It's not like you're going on location where you have to make sure you take everything with you. And no, the answer is no, you can't. The problem solving required is 1/100th the cost to do it when you're sitting around going, hey, you know what would be really good is if we had the what. Oh, yeah, great idea. We can get one of those. And and so that's obviously what we did. It was particularly the case with the DO, with the background class,
right,
because we really needed to know what the fuck was going on. But the savings for the DOP course, it was a cracker. And we got exactly what we wanted, which was great, and some really nice footage. And I assume you've done a lot of shoots with panther dollies. I've done a lot of shoots with panthers, and I'm going to think when I'm blanking on the bigger ones. You know, the I'm going to say Cooper, but that's not right. The you know, the bigger dollies, anyway, the huge, really ones that start with C. Anyway, God,
not cr-
yeah, you know, what,
the brand,
you know, the big, yeah, the brand of the really big dollies that start with C. Okay, forget that I even mentioned that, and just imagine that I'm like really good at like not forgetting that. anyway, yes, so. We had this big dolly, and what was great about it in the shoot is that we were doing stuff that you'd totally expect, such as, you know, the moving in shots and stuff. But we also did some stuff that I don't normally do with dollies because it was the perverse thing that you can do with a course like this is say to the grip, hey, what's some of the stuff that you do less obviously? And there's one thing that he did that he said, oh, I do this about twice a year, and it was unbelievable. I didn't even know you could do it, and I was like, okay, this is really cool. We're going to have to open with one of these shots. So I won't tell you what it is because you'll see it, but it's a really interesting one of the, you know, which is why I love doing these things. You go to yourself, okay, if I was in a position that this was required, that would be a total way out of this problem that I wouldn't have even thought you could do. If we'd been at a pre-pro meeting and you'd said to me, let's solve that with a dolly, I'd be like, no, John, you don't understand. The problem is like this, a dolly isn't going to work there because you need that. And you'd be like, actually, no, Mike, that's not true. So you'll see that in the upcoming class.
Sounds
like my sense
of
like
fun.
Holding stuff back to kind of keep the sense of intrigue.
Yes.
Yes. Don't give it all away.
No.
God, I just can't name that dolly. It's going to just haunt me for the rest of the day. Because, yeah.
Well, why don't you do a search?
Okay.
Just try and do that. And I'll talk about...
How do you do a search on something you don't know what to search on? Okay. No. Go on.
Crane C.
Okay.
Dolly, see, you'll find it's a big brand, then it'll come up. So we're going to make the move. We're really happy.
This is awesome. I'm
to
so glad
actually
you mentioned this.
Make the move at PhD to get rid of the torrent functionality. We've found a way, and we've been doing this long enough and successful enough that we're going to actually start switching to a direct download mechanism for FXPHD. Basically, getting rid of the torrent, allowing you to download the file directly. We're probably going to have an option, so you could pick a server in the UK or a server in the west side of the States. Sorry, Mike. Hopefully expand to Asia. Asia soon.
Hang on, I can still download, right?
You can still download. It's just that's as close as you'll get on the west coast of the of the US, which is probably better than Texas, which is where it is now. But the idea being is hopefully to reduce the latency and increase some speed. But what I need is some help from people to help beta test that. Probably next week we're going to start where we'll have a special downloads page. I'm saying hoping next week, a special downloads page where you'll have a special URL which will enable you to access the files directly without any torrents. So if you'd like to take part in that and help us test that and give us some benchmarks on speed and so forth compared to torrenting and things like that, drop me a line. Just use the contact help link on the site. This is the best way, so make sure that the stuff doesn't get lost, your request doesn't get lost in email or find its way erroneously into my spam filter for Gmail. Just drop us a line, let us know that you want to beta test the new class distribution stuff, and we'll hook you up. It just involves a little bit of a little bit of work to get it going. We want to make sure it's working. We're having to, check permissions across the net, things like that. And we just want to make sure everything's working well before we roll it out to everybody. But again, I think this is kind of a positive development to make it easier on you guys to download things, have, easier notifications, easier ways of having it, your class material automatically download your computer without torrent. It opens up the possibility of having feeds that allow us to really easily just have the stuff download in the background to you, which would be really nice. We have that now a lot with the movies, but I'm talking about all the files related to that. So again, drop us a line using the contact help link and get you hooked up, and you can help us test the new things, the new distribution.
So I just think that the whole principle of the torrents was awesome, but I'm sure that there are people that just say it's just a bit of an extra step for me, and that you can obviously skip that step. But I'm going to say the torrents have been, just to give them some credit, have been really instrumental in allowing us to do a lot of the things that we've done getting to this point. So it was, I think we just sort of framed this up, it was not like a mild difference, like it saved us $100. Like in the early days, especially when internet stuff was so expensive, and maybe for the first few years, it was make or break. Like it was, just so you guys understand, it was really huge, the difference that those torrents made. And I know torrents get a bad name because it's, linked in many sort of congressional and political discussions right. with illegal downloads. But I just think this was such a terrific use of it in a legitimate sense.
Yeah, it really was. And it was significant. I mean, we think we priced it, and if we were to direct host it in the very, very early days, it would have been close to, almost $100 increase in price per user. And that was a while ago. We've been doing this 30 terms, so that certainly changed. But that was a big reason. And we've also actually talked about doing it and gotten a bit of, honestly, gotten some pushback from our members who actually like it, because it can be very efficient in fast downloads when you have a good torrent swarm. And for classes like, background fundamentals, and we have everybody taking part, it's tough to beat the actually combined download speed of a good, well-seeded torrent. So some people in certain locations were actually like, no, I don't want direct downloads. I want to stick to torrents. Those people might be a bit unhappy, but I think what we're going to be able to do is actually provide download speeds that will be very, very close to what we're getting with the maximum torrent. So I think in the end, it's going to be okay. And for us, it's going to remove a lot of overhead for you guys. And for new members, it's going to remove a lot of overhead and explanation as well, and just frankly make it a lot easier for everyone, I think, in the end. Basically make it easier for you guys to get your materials and get your materials, hopefully as automatically as we can make that happen as well.
Yeah. No, I'm really pleased about this, just because I think for some people it will take a step out. So obviously thanks for doing it, John.
Yeah. The vast majority, I think, will be very happy about it. I think so.
So what are you doing, from class end at your end? What have you been doing? Well, I've been talking about what I've been doing with my shoots.
I've been working on that. I've been working on some stuff actually as well with that whole idea of infrastructure for getting the classes downloaded automatically. It's most of it related to that stuff. Some of it related to the new OS X Mavericks notification functionality, which basically will allow you to actually sign up for notifications and have desktop notifications whenever there's new class material. So, you know, the little right-hand panel in the OS there, similar to what you have on the iPhone, there'll be a little, you know, column there with FX Guide and or FX PhD. It would actually show you that you have a new class material available there in your notification center, things like that. Just again, the idea of just making things easier for you guys to do. And this also just in general is like last week, actually helping the profs here in the third week, making sure everything's going together and they have everything they need to get the classes out and in your hands. So that's basically, that ends up being a pretty much full-time job actually earlier in the term, Mike. As you said, it's a little weighted, a bit heavy, and it kind of tapers off, that kind of stuff, as people get used to it as the term goes on. But yeah, at the beginning of the term, it takes a lot of concentration to make sure we get off on the right foot.
Oh, yeah, totally. In fact, it is stunning to me how much you have this end of term, kind of you have a little bit of a push for end of term, then there's effectively a break week and a bit of a gap, though we're doing tons of stuff, and then it just ramps through the roof. And yeah, I literally sort of say to my wife, no, honey, literally one of the four busiest weeks of the year, no, I can't take holidays, no, I can't, you know, go away, no, I can't be whatever. She's like, oh, really? Want to make a difference? No, really. It's just so much stuff to do. Hey, the other thing I wanted to flag, if I could briefly, is a couple of people posted some comments on the FX Guide about the quality of the VFX show. So I just want to touch on that just really briefly. If you are a listener to this podcast, maybe you listen to the VFX show. We have been trying to experiment with doing Google Hangouts and trying to get some really good quality Google Hangout stuff happening. Now, ironically, and part of that, partly to do to learning curves and partly to do with technology. To get what we want to be able to do at the Hangout level, we've had to experiment a little bit. And I chose, it was my decision, I really thank the guys for supporting it, but I, you know, blame me. I decided to use the VFX show to do that as a vehicle, partly because it's free. So it didn't seem like a good idea to do it on PhD where it's, you know, you guys are members. And partly because it seemed the right show to do it, because the people that were part of that show were people like Matt and Jason, who are friends of the show, rather than, say, an outside guest or an outside prof. I am totally aware, completely aware, that the sound quality dipped a bit in show 143, 173 and 174. Not because we didn't care, but because we had some problems. And then I had to make a decision, was it a good idea to bin it or should we just publish it anyway? And acknowledge that fact. But anyway, I just, if you are a listener and you know you want to know what's going on, we aim to get the audio quality of the VFX show completely and utterly, in fact, superior to what it was before we started this little exercise. But every once in a while, the plumbing gets exposed. And it really was, you know, Gravity in particular, really great show. It's been published now on FX Guide. And I would have hated to have binned that show just because the audio quality wasn't quite as good as we wanted it to be. That being said, we don't take quality of imagery and quality of audio lightly. You know, somebody said to me that we just didn't care. This is absolutely not the case. And in fact, I even posted on Twitter just as a kind of an informal straw poll. Do you want us to, if it's only 90% there, to bin it or publish? And everybody said publish. Now, of course, that's a bit of a loaded question, right? Because you don't know what we're talking about until you can actually hear it. But nevertheless, yeah, I just want to reinforce, we spend an enormous amount of time, money and energy in all aspects of FX Guide and PhD trying to up the level of the quality and up the level of the audio and the mixing and putting limiters and just doing a ton of stuff. But it really is the case that every once in a while that plumbing just gets exposed briefly. So apologies from a personal level. Certainly wasn't John's fault. It was mine. But I would say it wasn't a negligence fault. It was a learning curve fault. But hey, there you go.
Yeah, but I mean, that's it was, you know, Mike talked about doing this and we're fully supportive. I mean, the idea is you need to do it. You need to put the technology to the test and you need to do it in a production situation. It seemed like really, and it was, it didn't just seem like it. It was a sensible thing to do in order to figure out and work out the kinks and learn what goes on in that process. It's very similar to, you know, kind of doing when you're doing work on your own an application like Nuke, you're never going to kind of push yourself in the way that you're going to do if you were doing that for a client or a real-world situation. And that's exactly what this case was, and I think was a really sensible thing to try. And it's going to get better. And on top of that, we're going to use this tech hopefully for stuff on FXPHD. We've been talking, we've been talking to Ryan, and we kind of pitched the idea of maybe for his MoGraph course during break week, during a do a Google Hangout with the course members for that, utilizing some of the stuff that the team in Sydney has learned in that process in order to make sure it works and works smoothly. We're talking about doing some stuff as well related to the Flame course as well, maybe having some folks from Montreal take part. So it's all, you know, it all feeds into the same thing. But this is, you know, rather than test it on you guys as well, that seemed really sensible, and it was sensible to try that out for the VFX show. And the guys have been working really hard in Sydney to actually make it happen. This is something, I have not been involved in other than trying to get Google to link our two YouTube accounts back in the early days of setting this up. But they've been really doing all the legwork on that. And it's really cool tech, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to say, if you want to do a simple hangout, it's simple.
Right.
The hangouts we want to do, we want to be able to control them, have HD quality, be able to play clips, be able to switch and mix around the world with feeds coming in from like three or four separate locations. And when that all runs, it looks super simple. And when it doesn't run, it's, you know, well, hang on, why isn't that so? But I've got to say, if you try your own Google Hangout, obviously it's pretty easy with three people, if that's all there is. It's the three or four people broadcasting to many, maintaining audio sync and all that kind of stuff that is a little harder than you might first imagine. And I think part of that, John,
there's some latency between the recordings and your location? Really?
But to give you an idea, and I was talking to someone about this, it was like, well, think about this for a second, right? It's really easy if the other participants in the Hangout didn't have to hear what I had to say or see what I was showing. But, you know, you have to pipe stuff to them and then pipe stuff to the live audience and then make sure that, you know, I don't hear myself back when talking to them, because that's a very serious problem for trying to speak while hearing yourself out of sync. So you've got mix minus feeds going back and forth, and you've got three or four different audio feeds. And as it starts to build up in complexity, it, you know, it's obviously a lot more gear and a lot more people running it. Now, you might say, surely this is just going to get simpler. And you're probably right. It probably will get simpler. But for right now, this is what it takes to do.
Right.
And we're happy to do that. I've got to say also, it's also the nature of things. When we did the first ever FX Guide TV, we did a pilot to see what it was like. I think we binned the first pilot we ever did of FX Guide TV. It's really hard to do a live show and bin it because it's out there. The second thing is, if you look at FX Guide TV, completely separate from what we've been discussing, just got nothing to do with the VFX show or anything to do with Hangouts, you'll notice that we've been trying to improve the style and look of those shows. So in that particular case, I think it's worked really well. I don't think we've had a, you know, like a, oh my God, I really hate the way FX Guide TV is looking at the moment.
Right.
And we've been trying to, you know, develop up more camera skills and make them more visually engaging and more interesting. Again, stuff feeding into work that happens across the board inside PhD and FX Guide. It's just that when it works really well, everyone goes, oh, great. When there's a slight problem, I get hate mail. No, I actually really don't mind getting the mail, because we do ask people to email us even if you don't like what you're seeing or hearing. And, you know, for me to say that, I have to stand by it. So, yeah, if somebody says that sucks, I do still appreciate them letting me know. But anyway, this is the only place that we want to discuss that, because you guys that are listening are kind of, well, family, if you know what I mean. You are tend to be much closer to us than anyone else. And so I figure this is the best place to kind of just let you guys know. Plus, I really care about your opinions. All right. Well, that's it from me. What about you, John?
I think so. Get back to work. Get more stuff going on the term. Start fixing stuff that's reared its head with Mavericks.
I have only 14 things on my call list and email list to get to, so that's good. That's probably need to be done by, I don't know, about now.
Yeah, okay. So good luck with that.
We will stop complaining.
Well, yes. Well, anyway, thanks, guys, for so much for taking time to listen, and we'll talk to you next week. See ya.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.